And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And as we told you guys last week, welcome back to our weekly episodes now here going up and through the season. As promised, we are back here going to break down the offensive side of the ball for Minnesota this fall. But Luke, before we get into that, how are you tonight?
I'm doing all right. Yourself?
Good. I'm surprised you're not at the Pro-Am. You were telling me that Mbakwe, Cole Aldridge are there, and I know you're a big basketball bobo.
I know. I am surprised that I'm also not there. Somebody wanted to record a podcast, so I obliged.
I'm so demanding, aren't I?
Just terrible. All right, let's get into this. Let's get into this football conversation. Ryan, I want to get right into kind of some scheme stuff. Like, this is a new coaching staff. I will admit I was not a Western Michigan bobo. I did not watch a lot of Western Michigan games. I'm curious to kind of see what we can expect. I've kind of delved in a little bit statistically of what I might expect to see on the field. But quite frankly, I have no idea what to expect in terms of, you know, in terms of watching games. So I'm curious to get kind of your take. What do you think are going to be the pillars of a Kirk Ciarrocca offense?
Well, I don't know that we're going to see necessarily what you've seen from Kirk the last few years at Western Michigan, just because, again, you fit the players to the scheme and not the scheme to the players. Did I say that right? I always get that wrong.
No, you fit the scheme to the players. That is usually my preferred method.
Yes.
So you play to a player's strength.
So you play to the player's strengths, and you look at what Minnesota has in terms of personnel and offense this year. And obviously you have two stud running backs in Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks, and you're breaking in a new quarterback. Wide receiver play has not been stellar for recent years. Tight end play is an absolute question mark with the health of Brandon Ling. And then you have an offensive line, which was coming off a pretty good, if not a very good, pass protection season in terms of they were a top 25, top 30 pass blocking offensive line. But run blocking, they struggled immensely. And again, that could be for a multitude of reasons last year where that Mitch really couldn't push the ball down the field. So teams stacked the boxes and Minnesota went through a multitude of injuries as well. But with Kirk Ciarrocca, for folks who didn't come out to a spring practice, for folks who didn't watch a spring game to an extent, it's going to be a run pass option offense. And to try and explain it as basic as I can. So what you're going to see for the most part is shotgun. You're going to see that. You're going to see a lot of shotgun. So either Demery or Connor will take the snap. They have the option to. They can read the defensive end. They can either give it to Rodney or Demery slash Connor can take it. Or, again, so that's the run aspect. Or they can absolutely go to the pass aspect where, you know, say they have two receivers out to that side. One runs a slant. Say one runs a go. Again, maybe he – so he doesn't give it to Rodney. He decides he's going to pass it. Well, you can hit the quick slant there because the linebacker's sucked in, so you can throw it right behind him. Again, it's going to be a quick pace kind of an offense as well. That's something that I know Kirk Ciarrocca really stressed immensely as they were trying to install the playbook this spring was they want to go with a lot of tempo. So, again, it's going to be a little bit different from what fans are used to. But, again, you look at what this team did last season, 13-1. Victories on the road at Northwestern, on the road at Illinois. Again, Illinois, not the greatest team in the world, but they did in the – I forget what it was. I think it was the Cotton Bowl against Wisconsin. They did only lose by 8. And then, again, they didn't play the greatest of games. I think offensively, Ciarrocca did some things to try and get Wisconsin on their heels. But it is going to be a little bit of a different kind of a look for Minnesota. So I know that you were looking at stats today, Luke. What are some of the things that – caught your eye?
Well, you know, one thing that stood out to me, obviously we've heard PJ and I think Ciarrocca probably say, you know, this staff is going to pride basically taking care of the football, right? And that was very evident in kind of looking at statistics for them. They didn't turn the ball over a lot. Their quarterback only threw 4 interceptions on the entire season. And in terms of fumbles lost, let's see, they only lost 4 fumbles on – they actually had 20 fumbles, only 4 of them lost. So, you know, basically 8 turnovers on the entire year. That's not too shabby if you ask me. So obviously that's going to be a something that they're going to focus on. And, you know, with Leidner last year, that was what he had 12 or 13 interceptions. I'm not actually even sure.
And I'd be curious to go, I was 12 interceptions and I'd be curious to go back and look how many of them were in the second half and specifically how many of them are in the fourth quarter, because it seemed like a majority of them were. But going back to your turnover margin thing, that's something that you, me and Derek Burns all, you know, spoke at length on. And that was Minnesota was winning these close games last year because they were having a very good turnover ratio in terms of, I believe they ended the year plus 8, and that was 18th best in the country. And so, yeah, you know, that's how you win close games. And then you look on the other side of things, why was Western Michigan 13-1? Well, they were the number one team in America in terms of turnover margin. They were plus 18. That's absurd. I mean, if you – you should be 13-0 going into the postseason play if you're plus 18. And again, that comes back to Kirk Schrock and PJ Fleck. And probably one of the number one things I heard on the offensive side of the ball from attending every spring practice was value the ball. And again, I don't remember how PJ phrased it specifically, but that is something that they were harping on for every one of the running backs in terms of holding it high and tight through the end zone as they're sprinting back, or the quarterbacks making sure that if you don't think you can make that throw, just hang on to it. Again, they really value the ball in terms of they don't want to make 50-50 to sit, or they will take the 50-50 shot. But again, it has to be in an advantageous kind of a situation. So again, plus 18 for Western Michigan, plus 8 for Minnesota. So again, if you look at the schedule and you see some people predicting a little bit better than 7-5, which is what I think Minnesota should be projected for come this fall, if you're going to be plus double digits in terms of turnover margin, you're probably going to be winning 7, 8, 9 games.
Sure. The other thing that kind of stood out to me, at least statistically, is, like I mentioned earlier, I didn't watch Western Michigan play a single down of football last year. I maybe saw a highlight of Corey Davis, but outside of that, I didn't watch them at all. And one thing that I was assuming was they are going to be pretty balanced, you know, pass, run, pass. But quite frankly, they weren't. They were skewed pretty heavily towards the run. They had 634 rushing attempts to about 300 and – hold on, I'm looking this up. It's like 378 pass attempts. So not quite a two-thirds run to pass, but, you know, pretty definitely skewed towards they favored the run, which surprised me a little bit, given that, you know, we heard so much about their quarterback play and so much about Corey Davis.
Well, to me, that's because you look at some of these scores, and again, you're 13-0. Not all these games are going to be close. I'm looking through their schedule now. They won their first game of the season by 49. They beat Illinois by 24, Georgia Southern by 18, Central Michigan by 39. So again, if you're going to kind of run off that, I'd like to look at the first half kind of numbers in terms of what was their pass and run numbers.
Cause, for sure.
Again, if you're up 10, 20, 30 points, and here we are in the second half, of course you're going to be running the ball. And another point to that, you look at how, and again, Luke and I are using Football Study Hall, which is SB Nation advanced stats, and I can't recommend it highly enough. You'll hear on us harp on it each and every breakdown podcast with Derek Burns. You look at, in terms of adjusted line yards, how good was Western Michigan last season? They were the 8th best run blocking offensive line unit in the country. They were the 8th best. And you look on the other side of things, Minnesota was the 104th. And I believe there's 128 FBS teams. So again, we talk about that. Minnesota had a bottom 25 unit. Well, Western Michigan had a top 10 unit in the country. And so again, you look at those ratios, and that's even knowing that information is in your back pocket. Well, of course you're going to keep running the ball when your offensive line's that freaking good. So they had two running backs last season in Jarvian Franklin and Jamari Bogan. One rush for 1,350 yards and 12 touchdowns. The other one, 923 yards and 8 touchdowns. And you look at the quarterback last year, because Mitch Leidner ran the ball 95 times for about 500 yards. And Zach Terrell ran the ball 64 times. So again, you average that out, around 13 games. So the quarterback is going to run the ball a few times a game. And again, some of that is because he was pressured out of the pocket more or less. But again, this is a unit with Brian Callahan last year, Minnesota's now tight end coach, who was the offensive line coach of the year last year, and for good reason. Again, with Brian here, with Ed Warner here, hopefully Minnesota's offensive line can get up. You know, I'm not even asking for a top 40 unit here off the bat. If we can get just in the top half, considering we're in the bottom 25 right now, I'd be pretty excited in terms of run blocking wise.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to see, you know, some improvement on the offensive line. Like we talked about at length last year, Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks really kind of made a lot with nothing on multiple occasions, especially Rodney Smith, right? He was yards after contact. I don't have this up in front of me, but it was absurdly high how much he was able to make up all on his own. So, you know, with improved offensive line play and the quality of backs that the Gophers have, it could only translate into success on the field.
Yeah, I'm trying to scroll through Pro Football Focus's college football tweets here because I do remember that they tweeted about that. And again, something you and I spoke at length about, and I forget, I'm not finding it, so I'm just going to move on. But
yeah,
Rodney Smith rushed for 1,158 yards last year, 16 rushing touchdowns, and I believe the number was close to 750, 775 of those yards were after contact.
Yep.
Like, that was the highest in the country in terms of in the Big Ten. And I think it was the FBS, but I'm not for certain. I'm going to have to go back and find that tweet. So, again, Rodney's able to make people miss once he gets, you know, past the first defender. So imagine what he can do when, instead of trying to make a man miss 2 yards in the backfield, he has 3 or 4 yards of green past the line of scrimmage to get to the second level where he doesn't have to make as many men miss. So, again, you look at the top two rushers for Western Michigan last year, they average out to about 5.3 yards per carry, and Minnesota was about 4.8. So, again, I do know that obviously the MAC and the Big Ten are two totally different levels of standards, but, again, hopefully that running aspect in terms of with Brian Callahan and knowing that Kirk Shiraka has Brian working with that unit still, because, again, tight ends and offensive linemen go hand in hand. But hopefully Minnesota is able to start to figure out that sort of thing in terms of on the running side.
Yeah, so last statistical thing that I wanted to point out was just kind of the receiving threats. We know how much Minnesota has lacked quality wide receiver play outside of maybe a top-end guy like a Drew Olatarski or a KJ May over the past couple of years. And quite frankly, Western Michigan has had really top-end talent with Corey Davis, far and above what the Gophers have had. But all that said, in terms of a breadth of options and a breadth of a production, obviously Western Michigan was able to produce at a higher rate. Corey Davis actually saw 37.3% of all targets last season. And then a guy named Michael Henry saw 22%, and a guy named Carrington Thomas saw 19.5%. Every other receiver was, sub 10% targets, but they had, a 1500 yard receiver, a 779 yard receiver, and a 637 yard receiver. The Gophers, on the other side of the coin, Drew Olatarski, he saw 33% of targets and he had 860 yards. Nobody else had greater than 400 yards of receiving offense, which is, woefully inadequate and speaks to the struggle that they had in the passing game, I guess, from my standpoint. This is a really scary stat, Ryan. We were talking about this earlier, but Rashad Still was the highest saw the highest number of targets last season at 39 targets of a guy returning this season. That to me is that's just scary. A position that there
doesn't breathe
nothing,
a lot of optimism.
No,
for you,
there's
Mr.
just
viewer, doesn't it?
No, it's just there's no proven commodity coming back by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, so let's start with on the Minnesota side of things. As you mentioned, Olatarski was a target hog last year. He was targeted
totally.
Early, often, every time in between, 102 divided by 13. Luke, you're a much better, somewhere around 7.5, 8, something like that.
102 divided by 13, that's going to be like 7.9.
7.
Yeah.
Okay, so 7.5, 8. So again, Drew saw 8 targets a game last year and still had 39, and Minnesota played 13 games. So the returning target guy for Minnesota has 3 targets a game coming back. And for me, when I look at Western Michigan last year and you look at Minnesota, you see that the top 3 guys in terms of targets for Western Michigan, Corey Davis, Michael Henry, and Carrington Thompson, come out to about 80% of the targets in that entire offense. And they're 3 wide receivers. So, again, The two running backs did see, or the two starting running backs, saw about 10% of the targets, whereas Rodney Smith on his own saw about 9%. So again, it's going to be interesting to see how much the running back is used in terms of in the swing pass game, the screen game, different things like that. But on the flip side of things, you look at, again, going from Western Michigan, where the top three guys were targeted 80% of the time. Well, Drew Ulitarski, Rashad Still, and then Brian Smith, who didn't play every game, obviously, for Minnesota, came in at about 56% of the time. So Minnesota liked to spread it a lot around a lot more than Western Michigan did. And again, I think some of this is obviously skewed because Corey Davis is obviously a top five pick in the NFL draft. They had Daniel Braverman, I believe, the year before, who was drafted by the Chicago Bears as well. But it is interesting to note that, again, the top three receivers from Minnesota were targeted 56% of the time. I mean, even if you go down to the top six from Minnesota, they were targeted 80% of the time, where that target share for Western Michigan is all the way up into three. So, again, you look at who is going to receive necessarily 80% of those targets for Minnesota this fall, and we'll get into it a little bit more, but I think Rashad Still is going to probably get up into those target numbers that Corey Davis and Michael Henry had, where, again, you spoke about it. Corey Davis saw about 10 targets a game last year. Michael Henry saw about six. And so Rashad Still, Tyler Johnson, an unknown third receiver or tight end, you're going to have a lot more targets coming your way, so I hope you're ready.
Yeah, let's actually just delve right into receiver now, since we're talking about, you know, receiving stats. This is a position group, you know, as we mentioned, has not been a strong point in recent years. You know, basically back to Eric Decker, name a receiver, maybe a Dejon McKnight, but name a receiver that has been really successful for the Gophers. It just, in that Jerry Kill era, didn't really happen.
You know, yeah, I mean, KJ May, Drew Ulitarski to an extent.
Yeah, but I'm saying like sustained success, right? Those are kind of like one-year wonders.
Yeah, and even Minnesota had Isaac Frichte. And again, now Isaac Frichte's on the active roster from time to time with the Minnesota Vikings, yet he wasn't focused on very much because they didn't really have a quarterback who could get them the ball. So, you know, some of it is receiving. Some of it also is the quarterback play, because frankly, the passing aspect of Mitch Leidner was not really a lot to write home about.
Yeah.
But obviously he was one of the greatest red zone threats for Minnesota in the last 20, 25 years when you go back and look at the numbers. But again, comparing Zach Terrell and Mitch Leidner last season, Mitch Leidner completed 56% of his passes. Zach Terrell completed 69.8, so 70% of his passes, an absurdly high number. Western Michigan passed the ball about 50 more times than Minnesota. And again, Zach Terrell threw for 3,500 yards. Minnesota's quarterbacks threw for about 2,250. Zach Terrell had about 8.25 touchdown to interception ratio. Mitch Leidner had a 0.6. So again, I'm expecting some more things to happen through the air. Obviously, that's where the 1,200 more yards come from. But necessarily looking forward to this immediate season, I don't know that you're going to see Minnesota flirt with that 3,000 number where Zach Terrell was at that 3,500 mark again. There are strides that need to be made in terms of with quarterback play and with receiving play. And I don't know that it's going to be immediate success come year one, but when you're looking down the line at year two, year three, year four, that's where you can see things trying to get closer to that 3,000, 3,500 number as quarterback talent continues to develop here and wide receiver talent as well.
Yeah. Receiving wise, I mean, they just haven't had great, we talked about it before, but they haven't had real explosive options, right? Especially at receiver. They've had more kind of possession receivers. But they just haven't had guys that have had sustained success across their entire career. You know, they've had, you know, a guy here, a guy there, you know, maybe Max Williams being a tight end was basically year to year the most successful, but you know, there just wasn't that in that Kill Clay's era.
No, and another thing I want to really touch on is I know there's been a lot of talk of, well, Kirk Ciarrocca didn't target the tight end at Western Michigan. There was only one tight end listed here among the receiving stats last year, and that his name was Donnie Erzenberger, which is one of the all-name teams in the MAC. He was targeted only 12 times, whereas you look at Minnesota last season, I think some folks would be surprised to know that the tight end was only targeted, see how quickly I can do my University of Minnesota math in my head, 38 times. So of the 300 and 30 attempts that Minnesota had last year, only about 10% of them went to the tight end anyway.
Yeah.
And again, Minnesota's going to adjust their offense if Brandon Lingan does come back healthy, the incoming freshman Jake Paulson. And then Colton Beebe, is going to be a huge asset in terms of Minnesota using a fullback, that flex tight end, now that he's healthy coming off knee surgery as well. So it's not like Kirk Ciarrocca really didn't use it, because Minnesota really didn't use it last season because of injuries. But
right.
I mean, I think their only way to go here is but up.
Okay, so if you have to take a stab at, you know, guys that are going to see, you know, significant playing time at the receiver position, or maybe let's take it this way, who are going to see significant targets, who are those guys going to be?
Oh, I think you have to start with Rashad Still, and you have to start with Tyler Johnson, the two guys that made the most amount of strides this fall, or this past spring anyway. Rashad was one that Matt Simon and PJ Fleck really had their eye closely on in terms of everything he did at practice, from the moment he came onto the field to the moment he got in the weight room to the film room, was trying to get them that mentality to him that, hey, you know, you're a very, very good athlete at 6'6". You run extremely well. You were a fantastic basketball player, so you should be able to go up and get the ball, but you need to get out of that mindset where you're now an upperclassman. You're going into your junior year of college. You need to start to develop like, hey, I can potentially go play in the NFL one day. And if I'm going to do that, I'm going to need to develop every other part of my game on the field, but also off the field in terms of that mentality sort of things. And so Rashad had days where he looked like mentally he was extremely worn down from everything that they were trying to put him through in terms of trying to test him and create his new best. But there are also days where he really thrived in that, and he went out and made plays. So you look at what Rashad has to go through there. Again, Minnesota's leading target guy from last season, returning-wise. But I do think the guy who's going to lead Minnesota in targets is Tyler Johnson. He was absolutely sensational during the spring. He was fantastic at creating separation, fantastic in terms of getting out of his breaks and getting upfield. And he was really good in terms of, I didn't see more than probably 2-3 drops throughout the entire spring. And again, for a guy who was playing high school quarterback just 18 months ago, I'd say that's pretty good. Again, I don't have to tell you how good of an athlete is. Obviously, the famous photo of Tyler Johnson dunking over somebody at the Target Center there, jumping over him.
Yeah,
he's a fantastic athlete, and he is developing a lot quicker than I thought he would under Matt Simon. So again, a very rarely used guy last year. It seemed like Tyler got into Brian Anderson's doghouse, which seems like a guy once, twice, maybe even three times happened. So again, only 25 targets for Tyler last season. I wouldn't be surprised if you see that number triple, where he gets into that 75. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the 100 range. Again, Minnesota's best receiver right now is Tyler Johnson. I think Rashad Still is on his heels, but there's a lot of things that Rashad Still has to work on. And again, outside of those two, I mean, I could tell you a plausible story where maybe Eric Carter comes into play, the redshirt senior who had high expectations when Minnesota signed him. He hasn't quite lived up to that fold just yet. He was targeted 23 times, but he only had a 39% catch rate, which was the worst of all the receivers last year. So again, you're targeted 23 times, but you only caught the ball 9. That number needs to go up, because again, his success rate was among the worst that Minnesota has coming back as well. So Eric has some things to work on, but he has been a fantastic leader for this young group. Maybe Melvin Holland is someone that comes back into play. And then we have a multitude of freshmen. I mean, is Drew Himmelesky going to stay on the offensive side of the ball? Is Philip Howard going to stay on the offensive side of the ball? Is Mark Williams going to stay on the offensive side of the ball? Knowing that Minnesota has a lot of depth issues in the defensive backcourt. And then you have the three incoming freshmen with Chris Bell, Demetrius Douglas, and Harry Van Dyne. So again, I can tell you who two of the three could be in terms of that 80% target rate. Again, maybe it's Brandon Lingan if he stays healthy, but Minnesota's got to figure out who that number three receiver is.
Who? Okay, just like pull a name out of the hat. Who do you think might see greater than 10% targets this year? If you had to pick. So if you had to pick.
As in terms of freshmen?
No, just any players in general. Who could actually you plausibly think get greater than 10% targets?
So Rashad Still, Tyler Johnson. I think if Brandon Lingan stays healthy, he's going to see a big increase in targets, obviously, since he didn't play in too many games last year. I think Nate Wozniak could potentially. Again, knowing that
you can't tell me a story where Nate Wozniak gets greater than 10% targets, I'll believe.
But again, think about it. If you're only throwing the ball 350 times, I only need him to get 35 targets. And when I look at him last year, he got 22.
Okay.
Actually, I'm talking myself out of this.
I don't see
the same story here. So Brandon Lingan's three. I think I want to say Colton Beebe, but again, I don't know how they're going to feature the tight end in the offense because again, it's something that they're just working on going through in terms of the playbook installation. So again, I mean, there's going to have to be guys that step up. I would say if Drew Himelesky sticks on the offensive side of the ball, I think he made very good strides the last probably 2 weeks of practice. And I know it. I know what he can do athletically. I mean, there's been many a talk about it. So I think Drew Himelesky could be a guy. And if I'm going to have to, again, I know for those people who love to talk about walk-ons, because I get them at every.
You can take gambles here. We're not going to hold you to this. I never write this down.
Well, the people on Twitter always do. People, everything I say, people hold me to. I'm going to say Chris Bell in terms of incoming freshman. I know that Matt Simon and PJ Fleck have been extremely high on him. I know that from talking with people at summer workouts that they've been impressed with him as well. And then if I'm going to pick a walk-on here, I'm going to go Matt Morse. I believe he is from Apple Valley. He was getting first-team reps in the spring. Again, some of that was trying to show some of these scholarship guys that it's time to light a fire under yourself if you have some specific guys playing above you. But in that same respect, Matt did everything that Matt Simon asked of him. And I thought he did pretty well. Again, he's going to be limited athletically compared to some other guys, but he is very good in terms of creating separation. So I'm going to be very interested to see how this target distribution works itself out. Because again, I know Tyler's going to be there. I know Rashad's going to be there. I know Brandon Lingan is more than likely going to be there, but who is going to be four, five, and six? If I had to put my chips in on some people, again, it'd be Chris Bell, Drew Himelesky, and probably Matt Morse.
Okay. I'll take that. I'm going to write these down real quick, hold them to you, and then hopefully people give you a hard time on Twitter at some point. Let's transition. Let's talk a little bit of offensive line. This is another, in my opinion, this is the other really big question mark on the offensive side of the ball. This is a position group that has struggled to stay healthy. This is a position group that, you know, for the most part, actually protected Mitch Leidner fairly well. But, you know, they did struggle in the run game, albeit that was their identity as an offense last year. But they struggled. We also had some departures, like I know Connor Mays left, Tyler Moore left. So you're going to potentially see some new faces. And there were a lot of injuries, right? So kind of what are the expectations coming in? And, you know, if you had to take a stab at that starting five, who are those guys going to be?
Considering Minnesota had four guys healthy at some practices, maybe five, depending on if the right guy was healthy. It's going to be interesting to see who's 100% healthy come camp. Because, again, talking with guys at summer workouts in terms of people who are watching them, all the guys that had offseason surgery on the offensive line are all progressing towards being 100% here soon or are very close to 100% soon. Some of the guys are limited just because some of the strength exercises and some of the conditioning exercises that they do. But the expectation is, barring any setbacks, which I have not heard of a single setback for the offensive line group in terms of injury-wise, they all should be healthy come fall camp. So, again, we've talked about Western Michigan's offensive line play last year. And again, how great that offensive line was run blocking, a top 10 run blocking offensive line. You look at how successful they were in terms of pass blocking side. Football Study Hall has them as the 37th best in terms of adjusted sack rate. Minnesota last year was a top 31. So they were the 31st best. So again, there isn't much of a difference there in terms of what Brian Callahan did there and what happened here at Minnesota. Now, they don't really have, obviously, the amount of offensive line talent that Western Michigan had, considering I believe the offensive lineman drafted from Western Michigan was named Taylor Moten.
No clue.
I
got no clue.
Okay. He went, I believe, in the second round to the Detroit Lions. If I get all this wrong, I apologize. But, again, Minnesota doesn't have the offensive line talent that Western Michigan had, which is sad to say, once again, because Minnesota is a Big Ten school, and they haven't had an offensive lineman drafted in 10 years, where Western Michigan had one drafted this past year, and they're going to probably have another one drafted in their opposing, and the other, I believe it was the right tackle last season. He's got a very good chance as well. So Minnesota's offensive line unit has nowhere to go but up. And then when you look at who could potentially start, I'm interested to see what they're going to do with both Garrison Wright and Vincent Calhoun in terms of two guys that weren't able to participate in the spring because of offseason surgery, and along with Jared Weiler. And it was interesting to see that somehow Jared Weiler was chosen for, I believe it was the Remington watch list today, which, again, I put very little stock into any of these preseason watch lists, considering that it seems like everybody, if you are a decent player, you're going to be on the list. So where is Jared Weiler going to fit in, and where is Garrison Wright and Vincent Calhoun going to fit in? Now, in my opinion, I would probably put Garrison Wright at right tackle. I'd put Vincent Calhoun at right guard, and I would put Jared Weiler at center. And how would I finish out the rest of that starting offensive line? I would put Connor Olson at left guard, and then I would slot in Donnell Green at left tackle. I only say putting Connor Olson at left guard because he's going to be a redshirt freshman. He has yet to play a down of college football yet, and I know that Jared Weiler played well last season when he was a redshirt sophomore. So, again, I don't want to put all the load in terms of – I don't want him in his first year of college football actually playing – put him at center, him having to call out the coverages, him having to slide the offensive line protection one way or another, making all the calls. I'd rather just have Jared Weiler there and put him there and let him figure everything out where Connor just focuses on his left guard spot. I think Garrison Wright at right tackle can be more than adequate there. I think Donald Green has a pretty high ceiling there. Again, he was healthy at every one of the practices Minnesota had. So an entire spring of reps with Ed Warner and Brian Callahan, I say that's a pretty good thing for him. And again, I think Vincent Calhoun could slide right back in at right guard as well. So between Donald Green, who's going to be a redshirt junior, you have Garrison Wright, who's going to be a redshirt senior. Calhoun is a senior. Weiler's a junior. And Connor Olson being the only freshman in that group and really the only underclassman. So again, Minnesota finally has some guys who are in that 21, 22, 23-year-old range going against other guys in that range. So hopefully Minnesota's offensive line has somewhere to go. But again, injuries are the big deal because it's something that's hit Minnesota. It's seemingly each of the last 3 years is significant injuries, knowing how many guys were out during spring ball. So that would be my starting five though. So again, it would be Donnell Green at left tackle, Connor Olson at left guard. Again, you can probably switch Calhoun and Olson if you want, depending on how you want to throw it. Jared Weiler at center, Calhoun or Olson there at guard, and then Garrison Wright at right tackle.
So I guess my first question would be, there's not a lot in the depth department, right? What are the odds that prize recruit from Marshall, Minnesota, Blaze Andrews actually suits up this year and sees significant time?
Oh, I would say 25-30%.
That is higher than I was hoping for. I was hoping it was more like on the maybe 10%.
I think you could tell me a story because, again, you look at what Minnesota does have for depth in terms of scholarship bodies. They have Nick Conley, who I think is going to be the swing tackle for Minnesota. Bronson Dovich and Quinn Oslin are your swing interior guys. And then they also have Ben Davis, the California JUCO, that they signed to be immediately eligible here. He's been here since May. So, again, you have four guys that are above him in terms of in theory, plus you throw in Sam Schluter there as well. That's five scholarship bodies that should be ready to play before Blaze Andrews. But knowing that Minnesota's had significant O-line injuries for the last 2-3 years, I mean, I hope it would be in that 5-10% range. I personally, I'd like it at zero just so Blaze can get a year of school under his feet before he has to be asked to do something significant there. But again, in theory, Luke, you have Schluter and Conley as your swing tackles, or is your backup left and right tackles. You have Ben Davis, who can work at basically any position along the offensive line. And then you have Dovich and Oslin, who are your swing interior guys. In theory, Blaze Andrews, Kyle Sasek, and John Schmidt should just redshirt. But knowing what the past has told me, maybe it is closer to 10%.
All right. Let's move on to tight ends. We talked a tiny bit about this already in the receiving, in the receiver kind of review, and when we talked about, you know, pass catch and target percentages. But like, you know, tight end, you've got injury concerns with Wingen. Wozniak's been a staple, excellent blocker. We talked a little bit about Colton Beebe, you know, kind of being a flex player, being able to play some tight end, also some fullback. What else, you know? Otherwise, to me, I guess tight end's kind of a little bit of a black box. I know that they've got some freshmen coming in that are talented, but I know little to nothing about them. You know, I imagine you kind of slate in Lingen as a starter, but what do we have really after that?
That's a good question. And again, saying that you can slide in and pencil in Lingen as your starter, man, I hope so, because again, when Lingen is on the field, he's extremely effective in both the passing and the running game. And I think the run blocking side of things is where he's most undervalued. As I remember, people were trying to tell me when Lingen did play a couple of games last year, while he's not healthy, they rushed him back. I can show you a few gifs from last season, folks, where Lingen pushes his guy 8 yards down the field and he buries him. I think that collarbone was doing just fine before he had some other things come up. So, and all indications are as well that Lingen is at very close to 100% this summer, barring any setbacks here once again in the 3-4 weeks here left before fall camp opens. Brandon is expected to be the starter. He's expected to be 100% full go come the spring, but he's also got to assimilate into the new offense, because again, he didn't get those reps in the spring. He didn't, Colton Beebe didn't, Bryce Witham didn't, and only two tight ends did, and Coe Keefe and Nate Wozniak. So again, I hope Lingen is healthy, because when he is healthy, he's extremely effective. I'm not asking Nate Wozniak to do a lot for me, Luke. I'm asking him to be a glorified six offensive lineman when he's out there.
Right.
And maybe get 10 targets this year and hopefully catch 6 of them. Just be someone that runs a hook route, sits down. Maybe it's 3rd and 3 and you get 5. I'm not asking you to do much more than be a big offensive lineman for Minnesota. And I hope he can do that, because I know he's capable of doing things. The biggest wild card is Colton Beebe to me. I've been probably higher on him than most in the Minnesota media community. I think that he can be an absolute asset in both the running game and the passing game. And I think that if something were to happen to Brandon Lingen injury-wise, which history would tell you is going to happen at some point in 2017, I think Colton could come in right away and bring things both in the passing and running game. Again, I thought he was going to be a Mike Henry kind of a player. People remember Mike Henry being the fullback Minnesota had, I believe, 3 or 4 years ago from Matamidi. Colton is bigger. Colton is stronger. He is faster. He is more athletic, and he has better hands. He's all of 6'2", 260, 270 pounds, and he runs like a guy who's about 235. I know what he can be, and he didn't get to show that last season in his first year because he played through a torn meniscus for the entire season. So it was the old coaching staff in 2016, knowing that Colton had this torn meniscus, didn't ask him to do a whole lot because they knew they needed him. So again, I don't know what Colton Beebe's role is going to be, but I hope it's a significant one, because I think he can be a mismatch going against a lot of linebackers. Another kind of wild card of sorts in this group is Bryce Witham, who missed the entire spring with, I believe, a hip issue, lower back issue, one of the two there. And he's another guy that, again, hasn't seen a whole lot of playing time going into his redshirt sophomore year now. He only saw one target last year. So how is he going to break into this group, knowing that Wozniak, Lingen, and Beebe are ahead of him? How is Coe Keefe going to get in here, who I think was a very good take by Rob Reeves, who they flipped him from North Dakota State there. So, again, how are they going to use them? I think Nathan Bursch is someone that is going to be an absolute redshirt person. And I think he's probably, again, I wouldn't be shocked to learn that come the spring, Nathan Bursch has left the tight end group and he's now working with the offensive tackle group. He's a big Woodbury kid, someone who is all of 6'5", and I think has the frame to get close to 280, 290 pounds. Jake Paulson is the one who I do think plays right away. All indications have been from sources who've watched summer practices here that Jake is an absolute threat in the passing game. He runs very good routes. He knows how to create separation, and he's a mismatch going against Minnesota's linebackers. Now, that should excite you knowing that Minnesota's linebackers are pretty damn talented with Kamal Martin, Carter Coughlin. Among the bunch, there are obviously Blake Cashman thrown in there, Cody Polk, Jonathan Celestine, the list goes on. So where does Paulson fit in with BB, Ling, and Wozniak? I'm not entirely sure. Again, I don't know what the fullback tight end role is going to necessarily be because, again, Kirk Shiroka didn't have a chance to get a live look at Brandon Ling and Colton Beebe, Bryce Witham, Jake Paulson during the spring because there were so many guys out with injury. So how does that come into factor in come the summer, come the fall? We'll have to find out.
All right, so let's move to probably the most sure position on the team, which would be running back. I think there will be no surprises that the you have option 1A and option 1B with Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks. After that, you have Kobe McCrary and a stable of another kind of spring game heroes. But what should we expect, other than we have two really solid backs?
You should expect a lot of carries and a significant amount of carries for those two. And I wouldn't be surprised when looking at this year or this past year's numbers where Rodney got about 2-1 in terms of more carries than Shannon. Rodney had 240 carries. Shannon had 138. Some of that had to do with injuries. Some had to do with Rodney Smith was just playing so well that it's hard to take him out and put Shannon in, who's trying to reestablish himself coming off a foot injury. And I thought he was pressing at times. And then he also had Mitch Leidner there to steal carries, considering he almost had 100 carries himself, and he had double-digit rushing touchdowns as well. So I'm going to be interested to see how they value Shannon Brooks, because in my estimation, I think he's as talented as Rodney Smith, if not more talented. Again, I think you're going to see him get back to that 2015 form where he was playing loose, he was playing very confident, and he was a fantastic and sensational running back. But in that same light, I don't know how you're going to find a way to get Rodney Smith off the field considering the season he just had. Either way, if both are healthy, that means very good things for Minnesota. If both are not healthy, that's where things are going to get very dicey really quick, because sure. I don't think I'm as high on Kobe McCrary as some.
Sure.
I do think he is a valuable back in terms of he is a big back. He is 230 pounds. He's better than what Roderick Williams was for Minnesota. He's more elusive. He's faster. I think he can create more space and drive people, if not better than Roderick did. It's just I don't know if I want him to be a 15-20 carry a game guy. Now, if he has to spell either Shannon or Rodney because of injury for 5 to 10 carries a game, 3 to 7 carries a game, that's fine with me. But again, I think Shannon and Rodney are going to see 90 to 95% of the running back carries this year if they're healthy.
Sure.
After that, I don't really see a role for Jonathan Femi-Cole outside of special teams. The Canadian product really hasn't made a significant impact here. Again, he's had Rodney and Shannon above him basically since he stepped onto campus, so he really hasn't had an opportunity. And then Dominic London and Mohamed Ibrahim. Dominic, the East Ridge product here from Woodbury, and then Mohamed up from the East Coast. I don't know that I can tell you a legitimate story where Minnesota is above 500 or at 500 and Dominic London or Mohamed are playing. So I feel very confident in Rodney Smith, feel very confident in Shannon Brooks. I feel pretty confident what Kobe McCrary can provide as well. But it's going to be the Brooks and Smith show this fall.
I know that we talked about this often last year when the Gophers were trying to find ways to get Smith and Brooks on the field at the same time. Even instances, we argued at times that maybe Rodney Smith was actually the best pass receiving option outside of Drew Olatarski. Any chance we see Rodney Smith line up at maybe slot receiver or something like that?
Sure, there's a chance. I mean, if you're looking for, going back to our wide receiver conversation, who could lead or be in that top 3 or 4 or 5 in terms of targets? Yeah, maybe they do that. You have Still and Johnson on the outside. Maybe you put Rodney Smith in the slot. And then you have Shannon right alongside Demery or Kano or however you want to do that. So maybe do a jet motion there. So they have to really honor that in terms of that jet sweep potentiality. And then if they don't, obviously, you give it to Rodney. He goes off the edge there, and he gets a first down. Or if they do honor it and they over-honor it, Well, that means Demery, Connor, or Shannon is going to be able to get a lot of yards if the offensive line does their job. So, again, I didn't see a whole lot of it during the spring. Yeah, I don't think it's something that Minnesota was really messing with, considering they were just trying to install their offense. But
sure.
I'd say there's a non-zero chance that you could see that this fall.
Okay. Let's get to the big kind of elephant in the room, the position that has basically been occupied by Mitch Leidner for the last 3.5, 4 years. So gun to your head, Ryan, who do you got starting under center week one?
I want it to be Demery. I can point you in a direction where Minnesota has more success with Demery Crofts in my mind, considering that I thought Demery really took a step forward during the spring. He was much, much more consistent in terms of from throw to throw, from read to read. He's got the best arm talent on the roster, and he didn't have those underclassmen mistakes that Connor Rota was prone to at times during the spring. Again, we talked about it, I think, in our spring recap was that was the thing that bothered me probably most about Connor during the spring was he'd have 1 to 2 throws every practice where it would be like, what are you seeing there? Because he would throw it directly at a defender and they'd get the interception. And again, if it was Seth Green doing that, considering he's coming off his redshirt season, I could understand that. But for a guy who is going into his fifth year, that gives me a lot of hesitation there, especially knowing how much Kirk Soraka values the football in terms of that turnover margin. And again, that's not going to win you a lot of brownie points with your quarterback coach, who's also the offensive coordinator, if you have that consistent mistake. And again, I understand maybe that was because the offense was being installed. There was a lot of things going through his head, but Demery didn't have as many of those throws. If he probably had half of that, if not less. And again, that was the big worry with Demery was he would have those during the 2016 and the 2015 when he was a true freshman. He would have 1 to 2 of those throws where it'd be like, what did you see there? You know, what were you reading? And he had a lot less of that during the spring. So again, I would feel much more comfortable right now going into the spring with Demery Croft as my starter than Connor Rota, especially knowing after those two, there isn't a whole lot of things that make you feel confident that Minnesota can win 6 or more games with Seth Green. I still don't know what Tracy Clays was thinking in terms of I can't tell listeners this enough. Tracy Clays' plan was to go into 2017 with Seth Green as the starter and Neil McLaurin as the backup. That should make you very worried considering Neil McLaurin lasted here 3 weeks and then he left. And Seth, I don't think, is anywhere near close to ready. So after that, I thought Tanner Morgan is probably your third option there, the true freshman from the Louisville area. And they also have Ray Estes coming in. I know that Gopher 1968 thinks he's going to be the next big thing here in terms of quarterback, but I think Tanner's probably your third option there. So if an injury happens to Connor or Demery, which again, you look at the past history, Mitch Leidner didn't play in every game for Minnesota. So you do need to think about who is that third option. To me, it's Tanner Morgan. I think he showed me a lot more than I feel a lot more comfortable with Tanner going right now than Seth Green, as Seth has some things to still work through, but I think it's going to be Croft, Rota, then Morgan.
Okay, so then looking into fall camp, I mean, they haven't named a starter yet, right? This obviously is a competition, or it was a public competition between what was seemingly everyone, and then maybe kind of got distilled down to Demery and Connor Rota. You know, how far into fall camp do you think it takes before they name that starter?
I can't see it going past 2 days. All right. Actually, you know, thinking about how coy college football coaches like to be nowadays,
yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if they name a starter internally,
right?
And then they don't express that to the media until we see that Buffalo game on the 31st. And oh, shocker! We'll see. Have to see who's taking first team reps. I mean, I'd like to think if you're a Gopher Illustrated member, once that decision is made internally, that folks will know. So it's the worst kept secret in the room. But it's probably something we in the media will be asked to not talk about until Buffalo. So, I mean, that's probably my most plausible scenario right now, just that it's probably not going to be named. But it's going to be named after 2 days, maybe a little bit afterwards. But I can't see a way, unless Demery really plateaus, if not takes a step back come this fall, I have to think it's going to be him.
Okay. So just real quick, I'm just curious, You know, last year Minnesota had averaged 29.3 points per game. Would you take the over or the under on that?
Well, I'm starting to go through Minnesota's opponents for this fall.
Yeah.
And again, you can read all that on Gopher Illustrated. We started to talk about Buffalo. We've gotten through Oregon State. Middle Tennessee's coming up. Maybe by the time you read this, or excuse me, listen to this, it's out here on Gopher Illustrated. And so you go to the non-conference. Buffalo was atrocious. Western Michigan beat them 39-0. They won like two games last year. Oregon State is 4-8. Again, their defense hasn't been a lot to write home about, especially in terms of run blocking or going against a good run blocking offensive line. They've been having the ball good on their throats. And then Middle Tennessee's defense, for as good as their offense is going to be, again, Middle Tennessee's quarterback wide receiver combination may be the top one we see in terms of throughout the entire season outside of a few teams, but their defense gives up as many points as their offense scores. So their defense is atrocious. Then you get into Big Ten play. And again, I'm not tremendously scared of an Illinois defense, a Purdue defense. But again, what'd you say the number was? 29.4. I think they're probably going to be somewhere around it, maybe plus or minus 2 points. Again, I would probably tend to think they're going to be in that 25-26 range. I know that they did score in that 35-36 range, but again, it's year one of an offense. You don't have Corey Davis, Zach Terrell. You're going from the MAC to the Big Ten. There's a lot of things that this team has to adjust to, but I tend to think it's in that 25-29 range.
Okay, so then looking at last season, you know, Mitch Leidner only had 8 passing touchdowns. Would you take the over or the under on 8 passing touchdowns going into next year?
I think I'd be foolish not to think Minnesota throws somewhere around 20. Again, Zach Terrell threw 35. What did he throw last year? I think he threw 33. So Minnesota, what'd you say, threw 8. So I'm going to take the middle ground there, I know. Go out on a stand, Ryan. I would say in that 20-25 range, maybe even less, because when Minnesota gets into the red zone, I'd much rather they just hand the ball off if they can to their two most talented players on offense right now, and that's Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks. But I think somewhere in that 20, around 20, is where you're going to see that number end up.
Okay, so the Gophers last year finished the season ranked 113th in explosiveness. Where do you think that ranking will fall come the end of this next season?
I'm absolutely shocked that Minnesota was that bad in terms of on the for people who can't sense that in my voice or didn't listen to last year's podcast, that's 100% sarcasm. So we talked at length about how the number of big plays was few and far between. And when you look at what Western Michigan was last season, they ranked 80th. So again, it's only 33 better, but you go from a bottom 20 explosive offense to about in the middle. And you did have Corey Davis contributing to that. I'd like to think Minnesota is obviously a lot more explosive than that, considering the offensive line play should be better. The quarterback play should be a little better. I'm hoping so, in terms of in the passing game wise. So again, if you're able to show opposing defensive coordinators that they have to honor the deep ball, have to honor you in the passing game, and they can't just focus in on your two most talented players, that's going to add things to it. Plus you add in what I think, you know, you look at Drew Olatarski 2016 versus Rashad Still 2016. I like to think that Tyler Johnson and Rashad Still in 17 are going to be better than that combination. But again, I'd like to hope Minnesota's more explosive. I hope there's more big plays. But again, I can tell you a story where there is obviously more explosive things going on there.
All right. So a handful of more questions. Do you believe there'll be a 1,000-yard rusher on this team?
If there isn't, I'm going to be thinking Minnesota won about 3 games.
All right. And will there be a 1,000-yard receiver?
Oh, boy. Let's see. Wolitarski had
860 yards.
Yep, and that was with 102 targets. Oh, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say that Tyler Johnson ends at about 70 catches for 960 yards.
Okay. Who's going to lead this team in touchdowns?
Shannon Brooks. And in terms of receiving wise, if I, you know, I talk about Minnesota only had eight last year, and if they're going to get 20 to 25, well, someone's probably going to be pretty close to double digits. I'm going to say Tyler Johnson as well, with Rashad still with probably 30-35% fewer catches, but it, obviously Rashad still is 6'6", and he can be someone that Minnesota can use in the red zone in theory. So I would say Tyler Johnson in the receiving with Rashad still right behind. And then I would say Shannon Brooks, because again, I think he is going to be in for awakening in terms of some people need to respect him.
All right. I think that'll pretty much do it. I think if we had to summarize this in a really short bit, there are a lot of question marks on offense, but there are also some, you know, there are some very well-known commodities that are coming back, and we can expect pretty high things, especially from that running back position. But outside of that, there's a lot of question marks. And I think this is partly why, you know, some people are fairly high on Minnesota. They believe in some of these unproven facts, but also where they're pretty skeptical and think that Minnesota could be in for quite a dip in terms of performance in that win-loss category coming into this year. Any closing thoughts, Ryan?
I think you touched on it. There are a lot of question marks, obviously, with any college football teams. If there are some specific injuries to key guys, and again, you look at that across college football, Minnesota's, I think, when you look at Minnesota's top five most talented players on this roster, I think you'd be hard-pressed not to list Shannon and Rodney among your top three. So if for some reason, you know, knocking on the wood of my desk, that if they can stay healthy, again, Minnesota's going to be pretty as successful an offense as they can with those two at their disposal. But if one and or both, unfortunately, get hurt, that's where things don't obviously go as well. So is Minnesota's quarterback play on the passing side of things going to be better? I think so, yes, but in that same respect, defensive coordinators aren't going to have to respect Demery or Connor in terms of in the running game, because Mitch was such a threat. He had 10 rushing touchdowns, so obviously the red zone threat there for Minnesota goes from, well, you have to stop Mitch Leidner, to, well, we can just key in on the running backs and see if they can fit in a quick slant or throw it to the pylon and go let your big receiver be athletic. We'll have to see how that comes out. How does Minnesota use the tight ends? That's a big question mark. Again, we talked about only 12, 13 targets for the Minnesota's tight end group last year. How does that change when Kirk Schrock has Brandon Ling and Colton Beebe at his disposal, Jake Paulson? You know, and also, who steps up at wide receiver? Again, how does that all come into sorts? Because I know Tyler Johnson and Rashad Steele are going to be there, but who's the third, the fourth, and the fifth option? If you are a Minnesota wide receiver, you have to know there is playing time up for grabs. There's about 6, 7, 8 guys that can plausibly slide in there, but you have to go out and get it. And then offensive line, where there's only one place to go in that sub. They were abysmal as a run-blocking unit because of injuries, because teams stacked the box, and frankly, because there were some times where Minnesota just wasn't very good. And again, Brian Callahan here is now, Ed Warner is here now. Three of the last 5 years, they've been the offensive line coach of the year. Things should be looking up there. And if they can keep pass blocking in terms of pass protection on their brand new quarterback, that should be a good thing as well, considering Minnesota was 31 last year, Western Michigan was 37. So there's a lot of question marks. And the nice thing about it is, Luke, we're about 3 weeks away from starting to get some of these answers. And we're only 7 weeks away from actual legitimate football being here. So football is almost in the air. I believe it's 51 days until it is here. And so now that we've done offense, let's next week, how about same time, same place, you and me talk a little bit of Rob Smith defense. How's that sound?
That sounds great. Looking forward to the conversation. Also looking forward to having real football back on. So again, want to thank everybody for listening. If you enjoy the podcast, and there are many of you that do, and you don't check out Ryan's work on Gopher Illustrated, shame on you. It's very, very good content, so I can't endorse it enough. And if you like the podcast, please rate it on iTunes and whatever media or whatever aggregation platform you use. We really appreciated it. It helps us have other Gopher fans find it more easily. So I want to thank you all for listening, and go Gophers.